was a double-edged sword, since Disney didn't own the company. In the course of renegotiating the Disney relationship with Pixar, Roth presented Eisner with a proposal that would both solve the issue of succession and address the faltering performance of the animation division. It was admittedly bold. Disney should buy Pixar, as it could have done years earlier, and merge its own animation division into it. Make it all digital, Roth urged. That's the future. As part of the deal, Eisner should make Steve Jobs, Pixar's chairman, president of Disney. Jobs is a darling of Wall Street, Roth argued, and you'd get John Lasseter, the greatest creative mind that's come out of Disney. That idea went nowhere. By late 1997, Peter Schneider and his top deputy, Thomas Schumacher, were increasingly absorbed by the stage production of The Lion King, Disney's second venture in live Broadway theater, even as they struggled with running the animation division. Beauty and the Beast had opened at the Palace Theater, but now Disney had finished renovating the New Amsterdam. Elton John was also developing a popular musical version of the Verdi opera Aida, but Eisner insisted on Lion King as a musical. He was convinced that anything Lion King would be a success. Schneider and Schumacher insisted that the $20 million show had to be different, original, and not just another variation on Beauty and the Beast, which cost $14 million to mount. Schumacher brought in Julie Taymor, a director he knew after trying to hire her for a Los Angeles arts festival, and asked her to come up with some ideas. She had never seen the film or heard the soundtrack. At a meeting in Orlando, she introduced the concept of elaborate puppets and masks so that humans could play the animal characters. Language and music would dominate, especially African music. What's so visual on the screen will be replaced by music, she suggested. And she wanted to add the story to include Simba's lost years, when the young lion would leave the wilderness and confront the big city. Julie, we're simply not going to do this, Schumacher said, insisting that the show remain true to the original. But he loved the look, the music, and the images she suggested. For Schneider and Schumacher, working on the Broadway version of The Lion King was the most fun they'd ever had. They knew it was a success at the first preview in Minneapolis. Before it began, Schumacher announced there were some problems with the set, and there would be some pauses. But there was a sense that something original was being born. The music started, and the first animals started parading down the aisles toward the stage, and the audience went wild, cheering and applauding. The Lion King garnered an avalanche of rave reviews when it opened in the refurbished New Amsterdam in November 1997. A gorgeous, gasp-inducing spectacle, Time reported. Vincent Canby in the New York Times called it one of the most memorable, moving, and original theatrical extravaganzas in years. The Lion King is told with a theatricality that frequently takes the breath away, and with a sophistication that has little to do with the usual Disney cuteness. The day after the opening, the New Amsterdam box office set a record by selling $2.5 million in advance tickets. At that spring's Tony Awards, the big rivals for the top prize of Best Musical were the lavishly produced Ragtime and Lion King. Ragtime was the favorite, in part because of lingering resentment on Broadway toward Disney. Schneider and Schumacher